Election College, episode 284, Calvin Coolidge, part 2.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Ben, last week we were together. This week we're not. And I'm actually podcasting out of the car today.
Man, you're just a wild roaming man.
I am. I tell you what, we are just a couple of weeks away from taking this bad boy RV out on the road, but that's kind of beside the point. Calvin Coolidge, he's the reason we're gathered here together around our computers and microphones. And, you know, in our last episode, we were talking a lot about his upbringing and then him beginning to rise in prominence nationally in the Republican Party. But it's in 1920 when at the Republican National Convention, Coolidge kind of becomes a player. And, you know, nobody's taking him seriously because you just don't do that with presidential candidates, right? In this era, you don't take them seriously until they surprisingly end up on the ticket. And that's what happens.
So after 10 ballots of taking nobody seriously, especially not Coolidge, they settle on Senator Warren G. Harding, which we've talked about on the podcast. And time comes around to select a vice presidential person, nominee, whatever you want to call it. And they want to have Senator Irvine Lenfritt of Wisconsin. But he kind of doesn't stick around after they put his name forward. He's like, okay, they're putting my name forward, and I'm just going to kind of, you know, head out. And so another guy comes up and says, hey, how about this Coolidge guy? Like, I read his book. Everybody seems to like that idea. And all of a sudden, they're like, okay, Coolidge, real quick. And you could just imagine that Lenfritt was like, man, why did I leave early? If I'd been there, maybe they wouldn't have done that.
Man, I should have written a book.
That's right. Yeah. So, of course, they are going to be up against James Cox and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So this is going to be kind of an interesting election here. You're dealing with a lot of different things. You're dealing with Reconstruction and the aftermath of that. Obviously, Reconstruction has been done for a long time. But all the kind of feelings and everything are still around. And, well, Republicans aren't real popular in the South, especially in Tennessee. But guess what? They win anyway.
Yeah. So Harding, he's running that crazy front porch campaign, and Silent Cal, he's there, kind of hanging out. And that's the reason they call him Silent Cal, because he didn't really say too much, because that's what a vice president was supposed to do. But Harding says, hey, buddy, come to the cabinet meetings with me. I'd love to have you here. And Coolidge is like, oh, okay. And his wife, Grace, was like, yeah, let's do this, because, you know, I'm trying to move up in prominence here in the social category in among D.C. people. And Cal's like, oh, okay. So there's the story, and I'm not sure if it's true or not, but, you know, it's a good story anyway, and that's what podcasts are all about, right? Stories. And what happened was Coolidge, he's at this dinner, and somebody sat next to him and said, hey, I made a bet today that I could get more than two words out of you. And Cal replied, you lose. And yeah, I guess that person lost the bet. But Calvin Coolidge was known as a quiet man. And, well, he would never become president, right?
Oh, yeah, that'd be... Nobody would ever let him be president, of course. Until, of course, President Harding is in San Francisco. We talked about this in the episodes about President Harding. And he passes away. Coolidge is up in Vermont, which, of course, that's where the vice president should be when the president's away, is in Vermont. And he doesn't have a telephone. He doesn't have electric there. So they actually send a messenger up to let him know about President Harding passing away. So he gets ready. You know, he does, says a prayer. He comes downstairs, and there's a bunch of reporters there. And his father, who was a justice of the peace, he was a notary public, etc., administers the oath of office on August 3rd, 1923. And President Coolidge says, "I'm going to go back to bed."
Sounds like something that I would do, totally. Yeah. If, you know,
you got a big busy
day. Hey, you're president.
Ahead of you. Yeah.
Yeah. So Coolidge returns to Washington, you know, the next day, because that's what you do when you become president. You go to Washington, and he gets sworn in again by a Supreme Court of District of Columbia justice. And they do that just to make sure everything is okay. And there's very little fanfare surrounding this, of course, as you can imagine, because the nation is grieving the loss of the president. And people in the country just don't know too much about Coolidge. He's kind of a low-profile guy. He is going to be faced with some issues coming out of the Harding administration, like the Teapot Dome scandal, as well as some of the other things that we've discussed before. But it wasn't too long after, just a couple months later, that Coolidge addresses Congress when it reconvenes in December. And he says, you know what, Harding's policies, yeah, I'm going to support those. And those issues included the formal budgeting process and the enforcement of some immigration restrictions, as well as arbitration of coal strikes that were ongoing in Pennsylvania. And it turns out that this was not only a historic speech, because let's face it, it's a pretty big deal when you're following a president who dies in office, but it was also the first presidential speech to ever be broadcast over radio.
Interesting. In 1924, on June the 2nd, Calvin Coolidge signs the act that grants citizenships to all Native Americans who had been born in the United States. As we know, there's a rocky history there. Of course, a lot of them had already been citizens, but it was a nice gesture, and certainly got some of the rest of them to be citizens, to be able to be citizens as well. So things move along pretty quietly until the 1924 Republican convention, which happens in Cleveland, Ohio, and Coolidge gets nominated as president on the first ballot. They ended up nominating Frank Loudon from Illinois for the vice presidential seat, but he says no, he doesn't want to be the vice president. So they offer it to Charles G. Dawes, who had been formerly a brigadier general, and he gets nominated on the second ballot. He accepts, and here we have another race going to happen. You have, of course, John W. Davis and Charles W. Bryan, which we should talk about John Davis sometime, because I've read his name and he seems interesting, but I don't remember a whole lot about him. I'm sure that's a common thing for people not to know the losers very well.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
That's part of the reason why we started this podcast, though.
Probably. So, of course, you know, this is the time when the Progressive Party is forming and all those votes are getting split. So you can imagine that things are going to probably go Coolidge's way, in addition to the fact that, you know, you know history. So Calvin's younger son, Calvin, actually passes away after the conventions, and he was just, you know, in bad shape. He said that when his son died, the power and glory of the presidency went with him, and Coolidge is still, like, operating normally. A lot of this has to do with the fact that he is grieving, but it also has to do with the fact that he's just not a confrontational guy. And then he kind of led by example, because the other candidates really kind of, I don't know, did the same thing with him, and didn't really throw a lot of mud. So it's kind of a boring election that he ends up winning with 382 electoral votes and 2.5 million popular votes over all of his opponents' combined total.
Yeah, so all of this boringness, actually, it was pretty good for the economy, or at least if you're a Republican, that's what you're going to say, right? That's where you had the roaring 20s, you know? He says, you know, different policies, I'm going to trust my cabinet. And the theme over here, if we're going to make a t-shirt, is laissez-faire, because that was his ideology. He was like, you know, he was all about supporting the local governments to make decisions over policies in their respective areas. So away with you, federal government intrusion. I'm going to make sure we're not meddling in your business. So it's kind of funny because during his administration and following, he wasn't seen as being somebody who would have been a great president. But, well, I guess we can talk a little bit about legacy in this part. He has gone down as kind of a darling of the modern conservative because he pretty much stayed out of business, you know, going with that whole silent cow theme. But he was also against the League of Nations. As you can imagine, he was just like, whatever. I'm gonna be silent on the issue, but if it has anything to do with interfering in places where we are not currently, then we'll just let it be.
So in 1927, Calvin Coolidge is out in the Black Hills of South Dakota. He's doing some horseback riding. He's doing some fly fishing. He goes to some rodeos, etc. And there's a place called Custer State Park, where kind of is his summer White House. So, you know, he's out there kind of on vacation. Of course, when you're the president, it's nothing's really a vacation, like, you know, because people are still going to bug you about stuff. And while he's out there, he says, hey, look, everybody, I do not choose to run for president in 1928. And so a lot of the reporters are really aghast at that. I mean, he hadn't had two full terms, so of course he'd be allowed to have another one. And he goes on to say and says, if I take another term, I will be in the White House till 1933. 10 years in Washington is longer than any other man has had it, too long. And so, you know, he goes on in his memoirs to explain why he made that decision. You know, the office takes a pretty heavy toll on people who are in office and, of course, those who are family members and stuff like that. And he's really saying that, you know, why should I retain this much power if nobody else has had that many years of service as well? So he really doesn't have any desire to run. And then he also is supporting the person who they're going to nominate to come after him, who was the Commerce Secretary at the time.
Yeah, it's interesting about Herbert Hoover, who, you know, he's this guy that doesn't have a whole lot of political experience, but Coolidge was really reluctant to endorse Hoover. He said, quote, for 6 years, that man has given me unsolicited advice, all of it bad. That's really complimentary there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he did build the Hoover Dam.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how that worked.
We'll have to talk about that when it comes to that his episode. Coolidge kind of reminds me of the guy at the family reunion that you kind of forget that he's going to be there. And then when you're there, you're like, oh, just kind of avoid him.
Because you don't really know what to say. He's got that weird personality.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even a winsome one. It's just kind of like, or even a dry sense of humor. It's just kind of like,
yeah,
everybody's happy, and then Silent Cal over there says two words, and you're kind of like,
Yeah. So Coolidge had some impact on the Supreme Court, like most presidents do. He nominated one, or appointed one, justice to the Supreme Court, Harry and Fisk Stone. Stone had actually told him he should appoint someone else, but of course he ended up going through with nominating him. And he nominated 17 judges to the Court of Appeals and 61 judges to the United States District Courts. So that's 61 judges is a lot of judges to appoint to the district courts, let alone, you know, any Supreme Court justice you nominated is going to have a long impact and can change the face of the laws of the nation for sure. So after Coolidge's presidency is done, he retires up back to Massachusetts, gets kind of a more spacious home, and gets a boat and, you know, goes around cruising around on this boat. A lot of people who were out there saw him and were like, oh, cool, it's the old president. Nice. You know, he stays involved with some things. He's the chairman of the Railroad Commission. He is an honorary president of the American Foundation for the Blind. He does some stuff with a life insurance company, but basically he kind of stays out of politics for a while. He does publish an autobiography in 1929, and of course that does pretty well. He even takes up writing a newspaper column. Can you imagine, Jason, a president now writing a newspaper column after they are out of office? That just seems so foreign to me.
I know. And, yeah. At least they would probably get paid a lot more than
I would imagine.
I'm sure he did. Yeah, so, you know, there was that election that he, during his presidency, said, yeah, maybe I'll be back for that. And he says, no, when the time rolls around, that being the 1932 election, he decides he's going to hang out on this boat, but then he passes away on January 5th, 1933. Shortly before he dies, he confided to a friend. He said, quote, I feel I no longer fit in with these times. Kind of prophetic there, because he was gone not too long thereafter, and he's buried there at the Plymouth Notch Cemetery in Vermont, and there is a visitor center that is located there in Vermont near where he grew up. Kind of interesting, his son, John, only passed away, what, about 15, 20 years ago? And he did a lot of things to preserve his dad's legacy. He even said that, yeah, Cal Jr., you know, his son that passed away during his presidency, he was the favorite son and they all adored him. And that definitely did contribute to that Silent Cal reputation. But it was John, his son, that would take his legacy and cement it here in kind of the history that you can actually visit. You can visit some of the historic places of Calvin Coolidge's childhood there in New England.
Something to make note of is that even though Coolidge was not like in the limelight, he wasn't always in the public eye, he did have a lot of interaction with the press, and specifically, he did some stuff on the radio, which I think is interesting because, you know, radio was brand new then. It leads to all sorts of other things, which eventually lead into podcasts, and that's where we're talking about them. But he signs the Radio Act of 1927, and this really helps regulate the radio industry and, you know, gives us the different stations that we know now today. So that's pretty cool. He also was the first president to appear in a talkie or a sound film, where they actually went and filmed him on the White House lawn and stuff like that. So definitely, even though he was kind of a, I don't know if recluse is the right word, but certainly not a hugely public figure, even though he was the most public figure, had a lot to do with the media and just innovating there.
Yeah. And maybe you're a little bit like Silent Cal and you don't say a lot, but you know what you could do? This is a shocker. Are you ready? Leave a review for Election College on iTunes. It's
what?
Really easy to do. Yeah, that you can even just say what. But as long as you give us 5 stars, we don't care.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, maybe we care a little bit, but, you know. We really appreciate reviews, and telling a friend in person or, you know, over the internet or on social media is a great way to do that as well. As always, don't forget, if you're shopping on Amazon and want to help out the show financially, you can go to electioncollege.com/Amazon you'll go and get whatever you're going to get at the normal price, and we'll get a small cut of it. I don't know how they do it, you know, but they're rich, so they can give us money. Amazon can give us money if they want to. I won't tell them no.
Yeah, we will take money just about under any circumstance that's, like, legal.
Well, yeah.
Speaking of legal, we can't wait to join you again next week. And, you know, while you're waiting for another episode to come out, you can always join our Facebook group. Head over to electioncollege.com/group, and you will be taken to our private Facebook group, where we would love to have you join us.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.